My head was still ringing when I reached the car and opened the boot. I handed over a packet of my faithful sulfonamide powders. They had done great things for me, but I didn't expect much here. It was strange that I should go straight from the chief shouter of the practice to the chief whisperer. Elijah Wentworth made all his communications sotto voce. I found Mr. Wentworth hosing down his cow buyer, and he turned and looked at me with his habitual serious expression. He was a tall, thin man, very precise in his speech and ways, and though he was a hard-working farmer, he didn't look like one. This impression was heightened by his clothes, which were more suited to office work than his rough trade. A fairly new Trilby hat sat straight on his head as he came over to me. I was able to examine it thoroughly because he came so close that we were almost touching noses. He took a quick look around him. "Mr. Herriot," he whispered, "I've got a real bad case." He spoke always as though every pronouncement was of the utmost gravity and secrecy. "Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. What's the trouble?" "Fine big bullock, Mr. Herriot. Going down fast." He moved in closer till he could murmur directly into my ear. "I suspect TB. He backed away, face drawn. "That doesn't sound so good," I said. "Where is he?" The farmer crooked a finger and I followed him into a loose box. The bullock was a Hereford cross and should have weighed about 10 hundredweight, but was gaunt and emaciated. I could understand Mr. Wentworth's fears, but I was beginning to develop a clinical sense and he didn't look like TB to me. "Is he coughing?" I asked. "No, never coughs. But he's a bit skittered." I went over the animal carefully, and there were a few things. The submaxillary edema, the pot-bellied appearance, the pallor of the mucous membranes, which made diagnosis straightforward. "I think he's got liver fluke, Mr. Wentworth. I'll take a dung sample and have it examined for fluke eggs, but I want to treat him right away."
"Liver fluke? Where would he pick that up?"
"Usually from a wet pasture. Where's he been running lately?" The farmer pointed through the door.
"Over yonder. I'll show you."
I walked with him a few hundred yards and through a couple of gates into a wide, flat field lying at the base of the fell. The squelchy feel of the turf and the scattered tufts of bog grass told the whole story. "This is just the place for it," I said. "As you know, it's a parasite which infests the liver, but during its life cycle it has to pass through a snail, and that snail can only live where there is water." He nodded slowly and solemnly several times, then began to look around him, and I knew he was going to say something. Again he came very close, then scanned the horizon anxiously. In all directions the grassland stretched empty and bare for miles, but he still seemed worried he might be overheard. We were almost cheek to cheek as he breathed the words into my ear.
"I know who's to blame for this."
"Really? And who is that?" He made another swift check to ensure that nobody had sprung up through the ground. Then I felt his hot breath again.
"It's me landlord."
"How do you mean?"
"Won't do anything for me."
He brought his face round and looked at me wide-eyed before taking up his old position by my ear.
"Been going to drain this field for years, but done now."
I moved back. "Oh, well, I can't help that, Mr. Wentworth. In any case, there's other things you can do. You can kill the snails with copper sulfate. I'll tell you about that later. But in the meantime, I want to dose your bullock." I had some hexachlorophane with me in the car, and I mixed it in a bottle of water and administered it to the animal. Despite his bulk, he offered no resistance as I held his lower jaw and poured the medicine down his throat. "He's very weak, isn't he?" I said. The farmer gave me a haggard look.
"He is that. I doubt he's a goner."
"Oh, don't give up hope, Mr. Wentworth. I know he looks terrible, but if it is fluke, then the treatment will do a lot for him. Let me know how he goes on." It was about a month later, on a market day, and I was strolling among the stalls which packed the cobbles. In front of the entrance to the Drover's Arms, the usual press of farmers stood chatting among themselves, talking business with cattle dealers and corn merchants, while the shouts of the stallholders sounded over everything. I was particularly fascinated by the man in charge of the sweet stall. He held up a paper bag and stuffed into it handfuls of assorted sweetmeats, while he kept up a non-stop brazen-voiced commentary.
"Lovely peppermint drops, delicious licorice all sorts. How about some sugar candies, a couple of bars of chocolate? Let's have some butterscotch and all. Chuck in a beautiful slab of Turkish delight."
Then, holding the bulging bag aloft in triumph,
"Here, here, who'll give me a tenner for the lot?"
Amazing, I thought, as I moved on. How did he do it?